You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This year's toxic cyanobacteria bloom on Lake Erie is turning into one of the worst in recent years. Scientists say these blooms are caused in part by climate change, and we're going to see more of this around the world. Well, Ohio researchers are doing all they can to find solutions to this new normal. Chris Winslow is with us now via Skype. Chris directs the Ohio Sea Grant College Program at The Ohio State University and part of the Harmful Algal Bloom Research Initiative, HABRI. It's made up of more than 50 science teams. Chris, thinking back to 5 years ago and that big tap water mess and water restriction in Toledo, how does 2019 compare?
So the bloom has actually been larger this year. And the toxin levels that we're seeing within the Maumee Bay area, where the intake is for Toledo, is seeing the same numbers. So the toxic numbers are high. On the bright side, since HABRI, we've seen an uptick in the amount of research results that will inform water treatment operators. So we've given them a lot more tools, technology, and even early warning mechanisms, so that even if the toxin levels in the bay were higher than they were in 2014. We do have the ability to properly treat the water so that it's safe for consumption.
So the idea is that yes, the toxins level may be higher, but you can do something about it that was not happening in 2014?
Exactly. So we've just got better dosing of chemicals that we know more about. One of the things that happened in 2014 is that the bloom went from not there to present very, very quickly. And then it also shifted from a bloom that wasn't producing toxins to one that did produce toxins very, very quickly. And so what ended up happening for us is that it just kind of took the water treatment plant by surprise. So now we have instruments and devices within the water column that tell the water treatment plant operators what's going on in near real time.
Walk us through what causes these algal blooms, these toxic blooms.
Yeah, so the organism is actually natural to the environment. So it's a native organism. It's called a cyanobacteria. The one in Lake Erie is primarily what's called Microcystis. And that organism likes warm temperature. It likes lots of light. And it likes nutrients. And so primarily what's driving this is that we're just seeing an influx in nutrients to the system relative to back in, say, the 80s and 90s. So we're seeing a lot more of what we call dissolved phosphorus. So phosphorus that's in the water that these organisms need to grow. So just like you and I, we know what we need from iron and vitamin B and vitamin C to exist. Same thing is true for these cyanobacteria, but in freshwater lakes, Lake Erie specifically, the nutrient that's in shortest supply relative to what they need to grow is phosphorus. And so we've seen an uptick in phosphorus, and that's what's primarily driving this.
What are the main areas of research that HABRI's been focusing on?
So four main focus areas that I would address, and the first one we've already really talked about. So the first goal back in 2015 when we started doing these research projects across the state was to give the tools, technology, and information that our water treatment facilities needed. The second major focus or thrust has been to look at the impacts on human health and even pet health. So we really wanted to know if you were exposed to these toxicants, what would happen to the human body? How much exposure would you need to have, that sort of thing. The third focus area was really in the area of bloom behavior. So we didn't really know as much as we wanted to know about when the bloom started and when it would stop and what triggered it from being non-toxic to toxic and when was the bloom all the way up at the surface of the water versus down at the bottom of the lake. Things like that are important because most of our intakes for our water treatment plants are at the bottom of the lake. And then the last area that we're focusing in, and I would say argue that this is where we're putting most of our effort now, is basically addressing nutrient inputs. So going up onto the landscape and trying to figure out how we can, number one, identify where the nutrients are coming from, but then number two, lessen that influence.
Speaking of reducing of nutrients, I have to ask, how involved is the farm industry in helping in tackling this problem?
They've been at the table quite regularly. So when we look at our data and we measure where the nutrients are coming from, so, like wastewater treatment plants that are more an urban-suburban signal, that's only contributing about 9% of the phosphorus in the Maumee. We know that it's a little bit's coming from septic tanks. Maybe about 4% of the phosphorus is coming from failing septic systems. But a good estimate is probably somewhere between 80 and 85% of the nutrients are coming from ag-related practices. But to come back to your original question, what is the ag community or the farmers doing in this space? They recognize this. And clearly, this runoff is from mistakes of the past, not through malicious intent, but just things that they were told to do as a producer, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. And then they're really learning about what they can change now so that what they do in the present day, not, you know, the buildup from phosphorus from many years ago, but what they can do now to lessen their use of the nutrient, but also apply it in such a way that it stays on the fields longer.
I want to talk about human health, which is one of your thrusts. And certainly headlines burst this summer about dogs getting sick and even dying after swimming in water with blue-green algae. An algal bloom killed manatees in Florida. They've caused massive fish kills. What do we know about what can happen to humans from ingesting water tainted by cyanobacteria?
Yeah, so we know it's a liver toxin. So usually when you ingest something that's not supposed to be in your body, that's where it goes to be detoxified. So this is a liver toxin. We've seen some evidence that it can have an impact on the kidneys. We've also seen that if you have sensitive skin, it can cause dermatological issues, so rashes on the skin. But beyond that, we're digging in a little bit more. We're looking at lab animals that have pre-existing liver conditions and seeing if this toxin can be a carcinogen, so cause cancer. We're looking at things like what happens when people are on the beach or on a boat and they're breathing in water. Are they getting minute doses of this? And so we're looking at any of the impacts that might happen on the lungs. There's some early research out that we don't have findings on yet that's looking at folks that suffer from irritable bowel syndrome. And maybe does this exaggerate the symptoms associated with that? So I can say that there's a lot of early work going on in that human health space. But given the grant dollars that are in play, typically for these health studies, you know, these cancer-causing studies or these impact studies, you need millions and millions and millions of dollars. So what we would say is the work that we're doing right now is what we would call kind of the preliminary experiments, so that these scientists have initial data that they can use to go for larger grants through things like the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation.
What is your level of confidence? When you think about this at night, at home, just turning this all over in your head, what's your level of confidence that you and other water researchers will find a definitive solution to algal blooms?
Oh, I'm extremely confident. I think, you know, we've done this before. Lake Erie was considered a dead lake in the late 60s, early 70s. It was even written in Dr. Seuss's book, The Lorax. And we found out that those algal blooms and those dead zones that were building up from that point in time were also driven by phosphorus, but they were driven by a point source, meaning they were coming from our wastewater treatment plants and they were coming from the phosphorus in detergents. So we put a ban on phosphorus in detergents and we invested a ton of money into those wastewater treatment plants to upgrade their ability to remove nitrogens. We pulled almost a third of all phosphorus out of the lake in the late 60s, early 70s, and the lake came back to its glory in the 80s and 90s. And so we've done a heavy lift like this before. We're calling for a 40% reduction now. You know, back 40 years ago, 50 years ago, this was a, you know, more of a third decrease in phosphorus. It's just a different source now. And unfortunately, when you think about wastewater treatment plants, you know where those facilities are and you can concentrate your investment there. When we think about, you know, 80-ish percent of the phosphorus coming from ag, basically, if you include all of Ohio, all of Michigan and Indiana, you're talking 7 million acres of land. And so it's just the lift is a little heavier this time around than it has been historically. But I'm really confident that we've got the right agencies at the table, the right academics at the table, and the right, you know, producer groups and suburban and urban residents to work towards an answer. This is a statewide effort, and there's a lot of universities at the table. We co-manage Havre with the University of Toledo, and it's been a great initiative.
Chris Winslow directs the Ohio Sea Grant College Program at The Ohio State University, a member of the Harmful Algal Bloom Research Initiative, Habri. Chris, thanks for sharing your work with us.
Absolutely.